There's definitely a lot of potential for the diversity of that could be grown up here. I think with the larger scale farms that we have and larger pieces of land together, even just row cropping of carrots and potatoes, peas and beans, some of the challenges that come when you go into economy of scale are certain crops take a lot more effort. Like, it's one thing to mechanically harvest, you know, acres of carrots. It's another thing to hand pick acres of peas.
Knowledge for Resilience, a cross-commodity podcast brought to you jointly by the Peace River Forage Association, the Peace Region Forage Seed Association, the BC Grain Producers Association, and the Northern Cohort. Welcome to episode 21. I'm your host, Nadia Mori. Today, I sit down at the kitchen table with Bess Van Zandwijk, a local force in horticultural production, a transplant to the Peace Region herself. She has put down roots and is exploring how local communities can be more food secure with the growth of more local food producers. Bess holds a Bachelor of Science in Biology and Environmental Studies. Together with her husband Mike, she also started Hip Peace Produce in 2015. At the time, they were located at Bear Flats, which unfortunately became the new flood zone for the Site C Dam. During her time as a grower, Bess has planted over 100 varieties of vegetables, fruits, and herbs. More recently, Bess and Mike, along with their two children, found a new farm home in the Rose Prairie area, where they are working on building their permaculture property. Without further ado, let's get planting. Today I get to talk to Bess Van Zandwijk. Hi, Bess.
Hi, Nadia.
Hi, and maybe we should let the audience know we got a little person in the room as well.
Yeah, we got the newest Van Zandwijk, little Wallace here.
Excellent. Maybe to get us started, do you want to just share a little bit about your background, like what training you did, and then what brought you to the Peace Region?
Yeah, for sure. So I'm a first-generation farmer, and definitely had a strong learning curve of how to grow vegetables anywhere in the country, let alone in the Peace. But I had the privilege of learning about the Canadian food system alongside of ecology and climate change at Trent University, and then got really passionate about local food systems as a change agent for getting people engaged and changing, or at least diversifying our production landscape so that communities can be fed, as well as making sure we, you know, can eat all the other rich goodies that come in from other parts of the world and whatnot, but fundamentally making sure that populations in Canada are food secure and that we have access to nutrient-dense foods to feed our family. Yeah, so from there, I ended up in British Columbia because in Ontario, I heard it was the holy grail of localized food systems. And so I came out here to kind of explore. We actually started woofing, where we worked on other small-scale homesteading farms, and just to kind of learn that part of life that growing up in a small town Ontario with parents who worked in manufacturing and industry, I had no clue about. And so through there I got an internship on the first certified organic farm in the Okanagan, and it was again a big strong learning curve of a really successful 30-year-old organic vegetable business, and mentoring with Wolf Wesley of Greencroft Gardens, anywhere like right from the beginning of seed all the way to harvest, markets, crop rotation, harvesting, weeding, making sure that the production system was in place, and really being privileged to be able to stand at the shoulder of the lead farmer in that system to learn what it takes to actually successfully produce a volume of vegetables to feed a community. So yeah, so from there, I had to pay my student loans off because it definitely took an investment to learn the things that I did learn. And so my then boyfriend and now husband, Mike and I, we ended up coming up to the Peace Region, mainly to work in the oil and gas industry and pay off our loans. And then ended up falling back into production because of the Site C Dam and the Class 1 soils that were being threatened, and the opportunity to use our skills that we had learned and actually start a vegetable farm business up here and start feeding our community and demonstrating what you can grow in the north, because everybody assumes you can't grow the diversity of things that we can grow. So it was pretty cool to show that we can grow cantaloupes and watermelons all the way up here and not be limited to cold crops and, you know, root vegetables and that type of thing.
Now, not that we want to get into too much discussion about Site C, but you were one of those producers who did lose their land because of the project.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it was my land to begin with. We definitely were thrilled to know the growers down at Cache Creek at Bear Flats, and they got us in contact with Ken and Arlene Boone, who were the landowners that were definitely a strong voice in having a voice for the valley and the Class 1 soils that were being impacted by that project.
You already mentioned a little bit like what drew you to farming, and maybe horticulture in particular was the thing that stood out for you.
Yeah, definitely. I think it was actually tasting a carrot that came out of the ground for the first time and not recognizing it compared to the carrots that I grew up on, and really just falling in love with what I could produce with my hands. Yeah, that is also scalable with different types of equipment and that type of thing, but just being able to feed myself through my efforts. And then the other piece is just horticulture. A lot of people really like fresh vegetables. And so our kind of motto or our philosophy for Hippies Produce was always about growing food and building community. And when it comes to vegetables, definitely it's a lot of work. And so it was a really great opportunity to give people opportunities to come down and actually get their fingers in the soil and see what a carrot looks like growing, or how to companion plant a tomato and a basil plant for, you know, for flavor and for pest control and that type of thing. And really just not only was really excited about learning all those things in the first place from my mentor Paula Anderson in Ontario, but also being able to share what I've learned over the years with the average community member who just is interested in learning where their food comes from.
So you mentioned with Hippies Produce, which was your vegetable production company.
Yeah.
You really built a successful business over the years that you worked before you took a little break to build a family.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering, like, how was that process for you, you know, growing from just starting out to then being a bit more established and actually people knowing about you in the region?
Yeah, I appreciate that question. We started out with, you know, just gonna do what we know how to do, and we're just gonna go to a 7-acre market garden. invest in the equipment and the irrigation and all the bins and harvesting equipment and how to transport and that type of thing. We definitely grew a lot of vegetables that didn't make it to people in our first year. And I had a really great relationship with the Women's Resource Center, where we would drop off all our salad greens and excess that would come to market until we honed in what the population was actually looking for here. Now, over the years, what we ended up doing was establishing a CSA, which is a consumer-supported agriculture program. And that was a way that we could get folks who were interested in our vegetables to let us know in advance. And then we could kind of tailor our production so that the risk was reduced, so that we weren't producing things people didn't want, that we knew that 75 families needed a share of the harvest for, 8 to 12 weeks of the season, depending on the season. And then really just kind of hone in our production so that we're getting a return on our efforts, which was really important, because in horticulture, we would have sometimes 5 to 6 people down harvesting with us for markets. And when you invest that much in labor and the market happens to be a weekend, everybody's gone, it really hurts not only your pocketbook, but also your ego. And not ego, but you know what I mean? Like, I want to grow things, and I put all, like, I grow these for months. I want it to go to a good home and be enjoyed. And so it was a mental health relief to actually set up a system of resilience by connecting with our consumers in advance. Really do see the value in that. There's definitely learnings from the CSA that we set up, so that we can, in the future, we would love to connect with community in the same way, but kind of learn from the feedback that we got from folks. So maybe having a little bit more options, or kind of tailoring boxes to what people actually eat, or having more of a more variety or a swap out. So we definitely learned some lessons on how those could work, but it was definitely a major stress reducer to be able to know that our community knew that we were growing, and that we weren't just guessing as to whether the market was going to be successful or not.
Mm-hmm. So the CSA, I mean, it sounds really great in theory in terms of, yes, like helping you with risk reduction and all that, but it's not without challenges, right?
No,
like,
that's for sure.
Once you get into it, and then maybe 1 week you don't have enough produce, or 1 week you have way too much, or you don't have what the clients would like, what were sort of your kind of experiences that you still vividly remember?
Oh, absolutely. And so once you commit to producing for a person, you are committed to doing that. And so one thing that we did do is we took a deposit, and then people paid weekly So it wasn't like we were getting, you know, $600 at the beginning of the season. And so if the box happened to, we couldn't flush it out to the full $35 value, we would do two things. We never ended up reducing the price, although we could have if we needed to. But we did do is seek other growers who happened to have more success in a certain crop or whatnot. So I know Pam out at Peacevale, we were often heading down there to get romaine. She grew these gorgeous romaine heads of lettuce. And we were very transparent with our customer base and just let them know that the season was a little difficult down in the valley this year. And so we're flushing out your box so you get your full value by supporting these other producers. Now, the challenge of that is that we're putting out more money to buy and to purchase at the value that it's worth from those producers, and just kind of handing it over. And so it's a type of model that it was great to be able to fulfill the needs of our customers, but it ends up being challenging, especially when you have challenging seasons and unpredictable weather. I remember our last year running the box program, we had one box member who was a friend of a friend, and she told me a year later that she got so many onions that she definitely said she was Chinese in heritage, and she's like, "Bess, you're the only farmer I know that can make a Chinese girl feel like she had too many onions." And I giggle about that because she was a good friend, and yeah, her heritage, they cook with a lot of onions, and so the idea of having too much, it was probably never a thought that could happen to her. So that's just an example of our onions grew really, really well. I will say that one thing we did learn was that being in the valley and not having a long-term lease agreement with rental, we were always stuck in an annual mindset with our production, and so the idea of taking a portion of the field and investing in cover cropping and taking it out of production to build soil and compete against the weeds that when you till for annual vegetables, over the years you do end up with, it can become more challenging with weed species coming in, and then you just need to have more labor or more equipment to be able to kind of deal with those things. And so shifting to a more perennial mindset would really create a lot more resilience, and we won't have the same challenges that we encountered with the annual mindset that we had down in the valley. Which is another way of saying that I learned a lot about production, and I'm excited about changing the way we go about things here in Rose Prairie, where we've purchased our long-term farmland and home.
Yeah, and with that, I guess that solves part of that problem where you said, you know, just having that long-term assurance that you can make those investments versus having a short-term lease or even just year-to-year renting or leasing some land, which probably a lot of young producers or new-to-farming producers would be dealing with.
Yeah, that's the context at which they have access to land. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, we're quite north here, and maybe for some of our listeners, they think, well, you know, like, yeah, you can grow carrots and potatoes and onions up here, but can you really do horticulture, like, as a business? And what's your thought on that? You already alluded to the cantaloupes and watermelons that can be grown up here. Are people just maybe not, they haven't explored enough yet, or how do you see that?
Well, I think lots of people explore in home gardens in the rural environment up here, and even in the urban setting. I think that to expect to grow hot crops that need 100 days to maturity is, you're going to be disappointed because that doesn't work. And so one of the things that we did do even in the valley was really trial out short days to maturity on different crops, and just know that, like, I can grow field tomatoes. You know, I can get tomatoes to ripen outside of a greenhouse. There's definitely a lot of potential for the diversity of that could be grown up here. I think with the larger scale farms that we have and larger pieces of land together, even just row cropping of carrots and potatoes, peas and beans, some of the challenges that come when you go into economy of scale are certain crops take a lot more effort. Like, it's one thing to mechanically harvest, you know, acres of carrots. It's another thing to hand pick acres of peas so that we can have shelling peas that aren't mechanically destroyed. But that's also the other piece, is that we've got smaller scale market gardens, which kind of meet the market of people who actually show up to the farmer's market. And then where I see a lot of potential is going beyond the market and really using agroecology as a mindset for crop diversity. But in order for that to occur, we need more infrastructure for the type of crops that we're talking about. And so the ability to store something that needs to be cold if you're growing it beyond the half acre scale. And then the other part of that is having purchasers and distribution channels so that we're not expecting all of Fort St. John to show up to the Thanksgiving farmers market, even though we'd love for that to happen.
And you also touched on something like, yes, we do have a short growing season. So as a producer, what do you think would be some ways that you can make it still a workable business? Because, I mean, your business still has to work 365 days a year, even though your growing period is relatively condensed.
Yeah, definitely. And so one thing that I learned when I studied alternative agriculture and Canadian food systems and ecological agriculture is that when developing a business plan, those producers that are looking to make the most with enterprise generation on their own piece of property is that it's not just about growing carrots. It's about growing a diversity of things that work together, picking a crop or two that you can value add to, and then being able to have shelf-stable products that you can sell throughout the calendar year, and so we're not limiting our sales potential to a few months of the year. I will say that there's a lot of farm operators in the region that are caught on to this, and that it's been beautiful to see, even in our own community, those pieces of infrastructure popping up to make value-added products available to different, or the processing of them available without having to do the capital infrastructure improvements yourself on your own farm. Yeah, and so I think that that's a really great tool for and a great business mindset to be able to go. The challenge is when you have a small group of growers, how many people can grow pickle or make pickles, and there still be, what we really want to do is diversify our offerings as a collective up here, if possible, and also look into different ways of processing. So we're not just canning everything. So looking at freeze drying, looking at like a cannery that will do pressure, do hot canning instead of low-risk canning, which is what a lot of producers are doing now in their own kitchens, because there's different regulation for that. But really, it's about thinking outside of the box to be able to capture and make the most of the resource that we're putting into our farm. So yeah, horticulture takes a lot of a long-term thought process. I mean, you want to condition land. You want to make sure that you're not just trying to seed into a pasture, that the grasses that existed in the first place are they're suppressed, and so that it doesn't take too much mechanization to be able to make those things successful. And so if you're putting all that effort and planting all this diversity of crops, you want to make the most out of them. And so what I would really like to see is not everything going to a donation at the end. And when you're dealing with short days to stability, like short days to going bad crops, then they need to be sold fresh. And so just looking at maybe even we have a root cellar here on the farm. And so looking at what crops can we produce that we can produce really, really well, that will store, and so that we can extend that market season and really increase the literal food security of not just our own farm, but the community as well, so that we're not dependent on food coming in from around the world and other parts of the country.
You touched on some of the limitations, or maybe even just looking at producers who start out. They may start out at the farmer's market, maybe have a small CSA that they nurture and grow. Mm-hmm. What would sort of be the limitations to go to the next step? Or are there limitations, or are people just not taking advantage of it?
Well, I would say as a direct market vegetable grower, aside from me talking about donating lettuce, for the most part, I couldn't grow enough produce for our market. I do think that it takes a lot of effort and a lot of skilled resource people to be able to successfully pull off a large market garden. I spent a lot of time training students and people who might have had a garden that were interested in some part-time work. And in the end, we need more growers, is what I think is what needs to happen. I'm seeing a lot of value-added products coming out onto the market, but there aren't a lot of market gardeners that are actually showing up with a diversity of things every week, to the point where I'm feeling the rush, like I need to rush back into production. But having found this beautiful piece of land that was tended really well and with windbreaks and that type of thing, and has soil that's anchored with roots right now, the idea of opening up more, I want to make sure that I spend the winter having a business plan and a production and operation plan to ensure that I'm not chasing my tail next year, and that I have a diversity of places to sell my produce through, that I plan on doing some value added with some of that produce. So just assuming that that's what's going to happen with it, as a business model for resilience. Yeah, and hope that others come along with us. And part of that is learning the skills it takes, because anybody can go out and garden, but gardening with efficiency and with production in mind and having reparations and being truly successful, it takes a lot to actually to run a small-scale diversified business, because you don't have that economy of scale to kind of buffer. And so if one crop goes wrong, then that could be 10% of your whole business for the year. And when you only have a small landscape, making up for that is difficult to do.
You touched on labor, mm-hmm. which is a big thing in vegetable production or just horticultural production in general.
Yes.
Like, what were sort of your experiences in terms of, yes, you need the labor, you also got to pay everybody, mm-hmm. and, you know, how do you balance all of that?
That's a really great question. We started the farm investing a lot of our time, and so my husband, he actually didn't have a job for our full season, and so he invested every morning. There's two of our third business partner, who is a friend from Ontario, who started the business with us. The two of them were on the farm 7 days a week growing, and I was working off farm and then doing all the social media marketing plus growing in the evening and arranging events so that we could bring community out to help the following season without having that investment of time on the land and trying to grow in the weekends and the evenings and that type of thing. We ended up definitely hiring skilled labor as the best that we could find. I mean, like I said, it was a lot of investment on how to know where things are in our field. You know what I mean? What a successful harvest looks like, how to quality control, and so the second you're not doing it yourself, there's a level of risk of, oh, you picked all the peas before they're actually formed. Thanks. But I can't bring this to market because the last thing I want to do is bring a sub-quality piece of vegetable, because we want to show people how to celebrate local food and not have them question its quality, right? And so definitely a challenge. One of the things that we did end up doing was tapping into the Eco-Canada grant funding. And so, yeah, wordsmithing, that it doesn't say that market gardening is a STEM-related education experience, but when you're setting up irrigation and you're developing ecological systems, and there's so many layers to science in behind what we're up to, that I actually engaged a university student who actually came to my firm for several years, and that was such an amazing thing to have somebody come with an academic understanding, a true passion about local food systems, and taking the initiative and the interest to actually really want to learn everything from seed to harvest, as the person I was back in the day when I was down in the Okanagan. And so having part of her wage subsidized by the federal government was definitely a definite win for us, but also just having somebody that could be an extension of me and show up to a market when my young family wanted to go away for camping, or really get to know all the crops and be able to speak on behalf of the production so that she's just as proud that she grew these rainbow carrots because she was a part of it from the beginning all the way through. And so I definitely think there's lots of opportunity. I know that there are students coming out of university education who are looking for experiences. Now, whether they want to come up to the Peace Region, I think that that's a bit of a cultural thing. Like, we need to celebrate what we're doing up here so that we can draw more people who might be interested in doing those things. Because at the end of the day, horticulture takes a lot of work unless it becomes mechanized and, you know what I mean, those other elements, which is one path that on certain scales some producers might want to go. But as far as engaging that next generation, and even if it's just to be able to learn about perennial inclusions, and I've been talking about a lot of annuals, one thing that we're really excited about here on the farm is actually pairing annuals with perennials so that we're not starting from scratch every year, you know? It's a really nice thing to have a nice clean field and go in and seed everything and it's done at the end of the season. But what's even nicer is seeing my raspberries pop up first thing, or the fireweed that I harvest and utilize, and knowing that that part of my production space is something that is coming back, my return on investment. And so that's kind of the shift that Hip Piece Produce is kind of leaning towards as a method of finding resilience for our farm, because 10 years from now, I don't want to be still starting from scratch every single year in my production space. I do think that there are a lot of perennial foods out there that are highly nutritious and delicious. They might not be what's on everybody's table today, but I think that's part of us shifting our food system, is thinking about eating seasonally, thinking about nutrient density, thinking about creating exciting products that people can add to things that come from our backyard. And yeah, that's something that we're shooting for the long game on trying to share with the community.
Now, you kind of touched on, like you mentioned, the fireweed or mm-hmm. other things, right? Like produce that maybe aren't what we typically think of. And so within that, I suspect there's quite a few niches that we haven't explored yet
in
horticulture. Yep. What, from your perspective, what are some of these things that we just haven't tapped into yet?
Oh, well, it could be as simple as on our farm, because I wanted diversity. We always grew a lot of herbs, mainly as a beneficial insect attractant, but also because they're delicious and they add nutrients. And culturally, as a Canadian, I grew up with a ton of herbs on my plate. And so it was one of those other things, much like the fresh carrot from the ground, that got me really excited about local food and horticulture that I participated in. And so our farm grew a diversity of annual and perennial herbs, and realized that after people got a taste a couple times, they were coming back and asking for those herbs. You know, and so I think that's one easy inclusion for creating a polyculture within our production landscapes. The beautiful thing about herbs is that they can be used fresh, they can be dehydrated, they can be added to salad dressings, and yeah, different like meat rubs and all kinds of different things. I also know that we grow a diversity of berries up here. I grew up in Ontario. It was the berry belt of Ontario is the area that I grew up in. And I come up here and it's so cool to meet all these producers who, either on a small or large scale, have really tapped into how nutrient dense and delicious and hearty certain berry varieties can be up here. We were blessed to find this property that has a half acre of perennial fruit. And so black currant isn't something that has been part of my diet previously. But this year, we decided to juice some black currants and add some honey from our neighbor. And we have this juice concentrate that is so flavorful that my Dutch husband would buy Ribena anyway, which is coming from Europe. And now we can actually make our own from our backyard. And so, not to say everybody's going to want a juice concentrate, but some people do. And when it comes to a niche, it's not about coming up with something that everybody has to have, but there are always people who want to diversify, want to add some more flair to their dinner, really want to support local or experience or explore what flavors come out of their backyard or, yeah, from their community. And so I just think there's nothing but potential that's currently untapped up here. And the more growers explore and work together, the more we can work together to make most of these things and really be proud of what the piece is able of producing.
And for your own operation, like mm-hmm. you're thinking about getting back, you're itching to getting back into it. What area would you like to sink your teeth in, if you're open to sharing?
Oh, well, I think you kind of caught on to a bit of my passion. I think there will always be a diversity of herbs. I'm definitely planning on a very purposeful scale-up of opening up soil for permanent raised beds for production. I've always been passionate about garlic. I love seeing all the different garlic producers that are popping up, and whether it's just on a small scale or medium scale, lots of people. But when it comes to genetic diversity, that's where my plan, now that I am not worried about next year, and I know that the effort I put in this year will come back to me next year. As a biologist, I'm really excited about vegetable breeding, about growing things from seed, about really picking hardy varieties that we can ensure that are going to provide us resilience into the future. And so as far as what I'll be bringing to market, it's going to be a diversity of things. Probably not as diverse as I've been in the past, because it's a little bit, it's difficult to grow really, really well that diversity of vegetables and herbs and fruit. So kind of honing into the things that do really well, trying to grow them on a little bit of a scale so I can feed more than 10 people the patty pans that come off of my plants. And then really working on seed selection so that we can ensure that we have hardy, delicious crops that are suited to the north, and that I'm not reliant on West Coast seeds and other producers in other areas. Yeah, and then hoping to get some peers within the piece that come along, and I know they're there, because there's definitely different microclimates within the region, and it's important that we don't expect the seed in the Peace River Valley to thrive out here in Rose Prairie.
If somebody's listening to this and maybe they feel inspired to, you know, look into this further, what would sort of be your thoughts that you would share with them, or maybe your nugget of advice?
Well, nugget of advice is if this interests you, find people who are doing it. Go make friends. Lend a hand for a minute. Really get a sense of what it takes to produce, and then get a sense of what production looks like on several different farms, because there are many ways to go about it, and every landscape and every soil is slightly different. And so one of the best things, and the reason why I'm still in this and still passionate about it, was that I didn't just read a book, right? I read some books, and then I spent years on other people's farms. I spent years learning their systems. I'm not saying everybody needs to spend years, but seeing what it looks like and touching it and feeling it and actually getting a sense of what the lifestyle is, the work style is, because it's not a lifestyle, it is work that we enjoy doing, but it also should be valued. And so that would be my recommendation. Lend a hand so that it'll pay back dividends for you when you start to do it yourself. And then the other part is get a sense of who's growing what and what their value-added products are, so that we can really foster a community of, they call it the blue water versus the red water. I would love for everybody to cooperate and for us to each find our own little niche, or know that we're shooting for a large market and we're all going to grow the same carrots so that we ensure that we have, you know, enough carrots to feed Save-On for the rest for the rest of the year. But that collaborative piece, and not just mimicking, but also finding your own place that's specific to you and your story and why you want to grow. I think there's a lot of crop varieties out there. I think there's lots of space for diversity and for growth. And I think that I just hope that others don't think of a competition mindset, because at the end of the day, we've got fertile fields and big sunny skies up here. It might be a short season, but we have a lot of capacity and opportunity. And as long as we can all get along and learn from each other, I think it's nothing but success for the Peace in the future.
Those are some beautiful thoughts to end on. Is there anything else you'd like to share on this topic? I know we could talk for a lot longer, but
I will just say that it's a true pleasure to set out to support a community and then have that community support you right back. We came up here and we saw that there wasn't a whole lot of vegetable production going on, and it was a skill set we had, and it's not why we came. But it's the community here that actually made us actually think beyond a 2 to 5 year plan, and the reason why we decided to put our roots down. Because I think when it comes to food security and relationship building and community building, we've been held so much by the Peace and the people of the Peace that we're excited to continue to foster those relationships and really create some resilience as a collective, not only just the people growing here, but the people living here and all the other resources. And we really like it here.
Well, I wish you all the best as you get back into production, and hopefully, or I'm sure your little man will grow right into it.
Oh, yeah. What do you think? You can be a future pea picker?
Thanks so much for your time today.
Yeah, likewise, Nadia. Thanks.
Welcome back. I hope my chat with Bess gave you a new perspective on the possibilities of horticulture in the Peace region. Next up, I get to chat with not one, but two folks from Diverge Business Development on the scoop of gypsum. Mark and Brett will share some behind-the-scenes insights on their business based right here in British Columbia. If you found value in this or other episodes of our Knowledge for Resilience podcast series, please share with your friends, family, and colleagues. You can find us on various podcast platforms, including Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and of course, the four partner association websites. Wherever you tune in from, make sure you like, subscribe, hit the bell, and follow us so you never miss another episode. Funding for this project was provided by the BC Hydro Peace Agricultural Compensation Fund. Thank you so much for making this project possible and supporting local agriculture in the Peace and beyond. For feedback or suggestions on other great Peace Region-related agricultural topics, email us at coordinator@peaceforage.bc.ca. Until next time, stay informed, stay resilient.